I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Beginning the 12th of July and running until the 17th of August is the Ensemble Theatre Company's 6th Annual Summer Repertory Festival. Playing in repertory are three shows, Dark Road by Ian Rankin and Mark Thompson. If you like Ian Rankin's books, you'll like this show. There's Aaron Sorkin's A Few Good Men and The Beauty Queen of Lennon by Martin McDonagh, one of the modern classics of the Irish theatre. Tarek Leslie is the Artistic Director of Ensemble Theatre, and we'll discuss repertory theater, this company, and the season of shows, and more. Tarek Leslie was trained at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. He's worked in theater, film, and television. He co-founded Ensemble Theater. Visit ensembletheatercompany.ca for tickets and information. We spoke in mid-June. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Tarek Leslie. Mr. Leslie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Very good, thank you.
So we're talking about, I guess it's a month before the run starts, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Before the season starts, yeah.
A repertory festival, yeah. It opens with Ian Rankin's Dark Road on July 12th, and then A Few Good Men opens July 13th, and The Beauty Queen of Lennon is our final opening on July 14th, and those run in rotation and rap with each other until August 17th.
So I'll ask you what repertory theater is in just a sec, because there might be people listening who said that might not know. But is this, does Ensemble Theater, do you put on shows throughout the year other than, say, this chunk in the summer?
We will be starting this coming year. We'll be, in fact, remounting one of our shows from last year, A Prayer for Owen Meany. Mm-hmm. We're going to be remounting that at Pacific Theater in January of 2019. So that'll be our first production that happens outside of the summer months.
And then, but these summer months, this is the sixth year, I understand, that this...
Absolutely, right, yeah. The Repertory Festival itself has been going for 6 months. There's 6 years now, yeah.
Now, you've been associated with Ensemble since its beginning, is that correct?
That's, completely right. I'm one of the founders of it.
And I understand it started in Victoria.
Yeah, that's right. There was a classmate from the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, L.V. Del Bianco, and I founded it in Victoria. And then we were both pulled in different professional directions after producing an initial season over there. I went off to the Shaw Festival for 2 seasons. LV acted in productions at the Belfry Theatre and things like that in Victoria. And eventually, when I moved to Vancouver in 2000, we moved the company over here. And we did produce a number of one-off shows at that point. And then the company was reinvigorated by a new group of people that did still include me, and we started producing the Repertory Festival 6 years ago at the Jericho Arts Center.
Yeah, and so what is repertory theater? You mentioned already 3 shows, and they're running one after the other for most of the summer. Is it pretty much the same cast for all 3 shows? How does that work?
That is one of the principles of repertory theater, is that there is shared casting amongst productions. So most actors in our company are in at least only two out of the 3 shows. Some we've only been able to get for one, but the majority of the actors are in 2 out of the 3 shows. So they're performing different roles, between those 2 shows. And repertory, an easy way of putting it is simply just that it kind of implies a rotation of plays, but it's also about, rep is repertoire as well, and that's about a troupe having a repertoire of plays and experiences as a kind of collective.
Yeah, so then I guess this factors into the consideration of what shows to mount, right?
It factors in a little bit more into, it does somewhat factor into what shows to mount, in terms of the balance of the 3 shows and sharing those casts. And then it factors into casting as well. Which is why every once in a while an actor will only end up with 1 role, because they were absolutely the right person for that role, but there was nothing that quite fit in the other shows for them. So we balance all those considerations when casting.
And a performer, an actor, could have, say, an important role in one show and a not so important role in another show. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'll, only for political reasons, I'll say that I think that all the roles are important, but in terms of the scope, like, you can certainly be a lead in show A and then a supporting character actor in show B.
And I guess that teaches the actor. I'm not an actor, you'll tell me if I'm correct or not. It does teach the actor not only the skills to, but it teaches them to be, say, nimble and humble at the same time, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I'm sure that someone with more letters after their name than me could also probably speak to, you know, that it probably aids in neuroplasticity and in our minds having to, you know, work on things like that.
Yeah. Does that happen though in repertory theater where you have a performer, an actor, forget where they are and another show that they're performing, say the next night or the night before, might creep into the performance that night, say?
No. I mean, you know, the same pitfalls exist doing a live play and rep that exist if you're doing a one-off show, a one-off performance. I mean, it's, you know, so an actor might dry and forget their place or something like that. But, you know, it's kind of, I guess the equivalent would be, unless we've started to have some neurological damage, we wouldn't mistake our home life for, say, our office life, you know, as people. I mean, you're doing one show set in New York in the 1930s and another show set in the 16th century and, with a slightly different cast. I mean, it's all, you know, that's never happened to us, and it never happened that I saw when I was at the Shaw Festival doing repertory there. I think you still can dry, you can still have a brain fart in the middle of a speech or an exchange of dialogue, but it doesn't seem that it's been a pitfall. That I think it's more likely you'd find an actor, you know, if they're drawing, stealing liberally from another play of a similar nature they may have performed in once, you know, to try to get through a monologue that, you know, to fill the void, to get them to the bit that they can resume their memory at, than it would be to, you know, confuse your performance in A Few Good Men with your performance in Dark Road.
I guess the accents are different, too.
There's a number of factors that sort of, you know, alert and remind constantly that you're in an entirely different production.
Yeah, I've heard Dick Cavett on a number of occasions, because he did some acting early in his career.
Yes, he did.
Ask actors that. I guess he has that fear. I guess he's dreamt it or something like that, or gotten up in the middle of the night in terror, wondering if that could happen one day.
Right.
And I suppose, maybe he's experienced that more than, say, than you have.
I wouldn't say it's outside of the realm of the possible, but it's seemingly in my limited experience over the last 20 years, it seems unlikely.
Yeah, well, that speaks to I guess the quality of the cast members that you have participating in your festival these past 6 years, right?
Yeah.
From what I've read in terms of reviews of the shows in previous seasons, they have done well, haven't they, with the work that they've given? And you're expecting
expecting
the same with these three shows this year, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you know, many of the we've got some new blood, but many of the old faces are back with us. You know, doing the same work, great work they've done in previous seasons.
So let's talk about these three shows. The Ian Rankin show. He's very popular in terms of authors and the books that he writes. Is this an original play or is this an adaptation of one of his books?
No, this is an original play. It is the first play that he wrote. I believe now he's adapted one of his Rebus stories or a new Rebus story for the stage. But he wrote it with Mark Lawson, who is the artistic director of the theater company in Scotland that it was first performed. Mm-hmm. It evokes a lot of the same sorts of ideas that you can find in his other mysteries, and I think people will see comparisons to things like, you know, Prime Suspect, that series that Helen Mirren was on for a number of years.
And
it's strangely evocative for me. I love pulpy noir stuff, especially from like the late 60s and early 70s, and there's some similarities that I can't help but find there.
Yeah.
Some of the more foreboding films of the 70s.
Yeah, so the central character in The Dark Road, is...
It's Dark Road. It's Dark Road, not The Dark Road.
Dark Road. The central character is, a female constable,
yeah.
and she was... there's a historic distinction there in that she was the first...
female DCI, yeah.
In Scotland. So,
yeah.
Is that when you're finding work to do or to stage...
Yeah.
Season after season, and you come across a play like this. What are some of the considerations that you have to make in terms of, say, the themes that you want to portray in a season? Say,
well, I care about themes more once we've actually, you know, ratified our season and things like that.
We've tried
our best to resist. I mean, we've done, a fairly solid job of branding ourselves as a company, but one of the ways in which we've tried to avoid being branded is that, you know, unlike a Shakespeare festival, unlike a Shaw festival that is predicated centrally around the work of one author, where we really are trying to just, you know, showcase ourselves as a rep company that mm-hmm. does... You know, the consideration is, do I think, and then some of the other people I rely on to bounce ideas off of, do we think the scripts are strong? And are they well written, and are they about interesting ideas? I'm less concerned if there's an interlinking theme between all three plays. I mean, if we find one or a few words that can describe all three shows equally, then I'm very happy to do that as a further sort of catchy marketing thing. But mm-hmm. it really comes down to, I like choosing pieces that I happen to think are intelligent, thoughtful pieces that in various ways explore aspects of the human condition, you know,
mm-hmm.
at our best, at our worst, at various places in history. Things like that, and what does it have to say about us as people in either domestic or extreme situations?
Yeah, I guess what's appealing about Dark Road is that you mentioned earlier, you know, the noir-y stuff that a lot of us like.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you're a fan of Rankin, you'll want to see this. And the central character is female.
Yeah, and that definitely, I will say, was a factor that I've really been trying in the last few years to, you know, ensure that our shows and the plays that we choose reflect the world we live in. And the other thing that was a point of consideration in particular was that we've had a marvelous member of the company for a number of years named Rebecca Walters, a very talented actor. And she's done really solid work in mostly supporting roles for us in the company. And it was time to give her a lead. And it was the perfect role to let her do that. It was, you know, it's going to give her a little bit of a challenge, but it's well within her wheelhouse at the same time.
And so that was the
consideration.
So then the next show that I want to talk about is A Few Good Men. And that's a big cast, isn't it?
That is our larger cast show. We'll always try to do one of about that sort of dozen to 15 actor sized plays that then is the, you know, then shares the cast with the other two shows. So that's I think we've got 16 actors in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of the aspects of that was interesting as well is that, again, because I do want to have a company that's reflective of both the talent available to us, but also, again, the world in which we live, I made a point of reaching out to Sorkin through his rights holder and asking permission to change the gender on a few of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I did so in a way that I thought, and I put it in my request, that I thought, I thought that changing the gender on the eight characters that I asked permission to change on wouldn't affect some of the ideas in the play, right? Like, there's definitely an undercurrent in the play, in one particular scene, an overt statement of the misogyny and a closed male-dominated system of thought, like the military. So I didn't want to be undermining those themes. So I made sure that certain key roles were still men. But I also, Sorkin not only approved the eight that I submitted, but suggested two others that if we needed to could become female as well.
Really?
Yeah. His reps probably suggested. I don't, I'm sure that maybe a PA brought it, that my email to his attention, but I certainly wasn't getting an email from Sorkin.
Yeah. This was his breakout, wasn't it? Because I remember.
It was.
Yeah, on Broadway, when it hit Broadway, that was a huge hit. And that was really the first time that people heard of him, and then he went on to the film of this show, and countless television hours of his programs.
Yeah, now a director. Directed Molly's Game, right?
That's right.
He wrote it on cocktail napkins while he was working as a bartender at a Broadway theater.
Really.
Yeah, his sister was in the JAG Corps as a solicitor, and during one of their sort of phone visits, she mentioned a case that was similar to the one that's in A Few Good Men, and I guess it percolated in his mind, and I think later that day, the story goes, when he was working his bartending shift, he began scribbling ideas onto napkins at the bar.
And what's appealing about your production, as you've described it, is a lot of us are familiar with the film, but when we get to the Jericho Arts Center, when we go see it, obviously it's going to look different because of the casting. That is what makes it fresh for an audience, isn't it? Even though you've seen the film, say, and you're quite familiar with the dialogue and such.
Absolutely, and I think the film is great, but one of the things I will say, when I was considering this as a play for this year, I read it several times, it spoke to me, I started to get ideas, percolating in my head, and then I went and I watched the film again just out of curiosity, and I actually, as good as the film is and as well as it holds up, I actually got rather impatient with it, because by that point I was more familiar with the play. And the play, unlike the film, really just dives right into the story, whereas the movie added a number of exposition-type scenes to introduce characters, and it's refreshing how quickly the play just dives right into the story. And it is so clearly, you can see why it was adapted to a film and that it lends itself to filmic adaptation. But on the other hand, the play itself is so clearly a play.
Yeah. The third show this season is The Beauty Queen of Lanon, and a lot of us will be familiar with Martin McDonagh because of three billboards. Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This was really his breakout in the American theater, wasn't it, from Ireland, right?
That's right, yeah. I think it was the Gate Theater took the production. Was popular enough to take it to London and then to take it on to New York. And then I believe recently the Gate did another production of it in which the woman who played the daughter in the original production was playing the mother. Mm. I think that just closed a few months ago on Broadway.
Yeah. So would you tell us about the show? Because a lot of us who like McDonagh will certainly enjoy this show because it has all those qualities that I guess his work is known for, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's so blissfully funny. Like, it's such a dark comedy. I mean, it's got some interesting domestic things and mother-daughter dysfunction fully on display, but he's got that inimitable cutting dark humor that you know, stops it from becoming a tragedy or a heavy drama. You know, it's just got a great human element and characters, in spite of how awful they can be to each other, I think you can empathize for, and if you can't, it at least dares us to empathize for them in the sort of situation where they're both sort of locked in this cycle as mother and daughter that's capitalizes the D in dysfunction, that's for sure.
And in Ireland, this is like a classic, isn't it?
It is. I think it, Skull and Connemara, and The Cripple of Inishman, those were his first forays into being a dramatist. And I think they really, all three combined, took the theater world in Ireland and London, and then, you know, the rest of the world by storm.
Yeah. Well, what's the Jericho Arts Center like as a venue to stage shows?
It's an interesting venue. You know, it used to be an RAFC training facility, I believe, during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
The barracks are still there. They've become the youth hostel that's next door. And one of the great things about Jericho Arts Center is that it has the ability to alter the audience configuration. You know, you can do things in a standard black box proscenium. You can do them the way we're doing them in the thrust.
Mm-hmm.
We could do them in the round if we wanted to, or at least the square. We could, we've tried a few different combinations, and mostly we favor thrust staging out there. So it's got that. Its location has a feeling like you're kind of doing summer stock in the country, even though it's, you know, on a good traffic day, about 15 minutes from downtown.
Right.
It's a great space. We'll be there as long as they'll have us.
Yeah. Well, and you work, I guess your work throughout the year is more than just the summer, right? I mean, the work of the company.
Well, as I said, we really don't, this will be the first year coming up where we're producing a show outside of the festival, with Remounting a Prayer for Owen Meany. But we have every year been trying to at least offer something in the way of events, if not fully fledged productions, between each summer. Now, having said that, the festival exists for about 2 months in the summer, but it takes most of the remaining 10 is to get the festival up every year.
I'll bet, yeah.
Planning, contract negotiations, designs, things like that. So there is an element of that, that takes up a good deal of our time. But the plan is always to at least do one other full production between the summer festivals each year. And this will be the first year we can realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it's great that Pacific approached us about remounting Owen Meany, because it made a relatively easy transition for us to do this, a manageable, given how our limited resources. It's very easily remounted, and therefore lets us have a presence outside of just the summer months for this coming year.
And then what's it like for the company year after year? Because you've, in these 6 years, you've built a following, haven't you? I mean, people from throughout the city come year after year, as well as from outside the city as well.
Yeah, well, and outside the country. There's a couple from New York that I think they have other reasons to be in Vancouver, but when they are in Vancouver, they have never not missed a season. There's a... another group of patrons from San Diego that again, they probably have other reasons that they come up to Vancouver, but they make us part of their visit. So it's kind of been interesting. And both of those two sets of patrons have also donated money to us, which is, rather amazing considering they're not Canadian and don't reside in Vancouver all year round.
Yeah.
It's a small start.
For you, I mean, as someone who works in the theater, I mean, we're all talking about how expensive it is to live in the city. I mean, it must not be easy to remain in the city and work in the arts.
Yeah, I think there's a measure of truth to that. I mean, I certainly think for me as putting my actor hat on, I mean, it's the way that I've got by and most of the people I know manage to get by is that you have to consider a range of things that are all acting related,
yeah.
But aren't necessarily, you know, I would love to be in other people's theater shows. I seldom have the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do book, film, and TV roles. And, you know, they help pay the bills. I do some voice work as well on series like My Little Pony and Polly Pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other opportunities for actors, too, doing training for various professionals that are out there, from police to doctors and mediation /counselors, those sorts of work. There's work for actors to be a part of simulation training for those professions. And so, you know, those are the sorts of things that one has to do to, you know, try to have their oar mainly in the realm of acting, but also get by and pay the bills or pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
I've been here since 2000. I don't have much to compare it to anymore in terms of, you know, other than what I read in the papers, other than what I could see on a real estate listing,
yeah.
Or, you know, certainly you can buy a decent, lovely character home with a huge chunk of land in Nova Scotia for the price of a studio condo here. So, I mean, I see things like that, of course. But right now, this is also where I choose to be. And, at the moment, I don't have any inclination to move away, and my mother's on Vancouver Island, so it makes it easy for me to visit her. So it's, all these things have to factor in, but I also do really like living in Vancouver in spite of the very real economic difficulties of living here. And I do hope there might be a change on that front, because I think it's been proven largely true that artisans especially are been leaving this city, you know, to less expensive pastures.
Yeah. What the reality that we're living in, not just in the city, but around the world. I mean, it makes your work, doesn't it, urgent and necessary. I mean, the arts do play an important role.
I think so.
In how we just get on with life, right?
I think so. I think it's a cathartic experience for people. You know, if it's a good, thoughtful piece, and it's one of those, it's one of the few remaining things where there's a communal sense of a shared experience. You know, your experience may be different, but you are sharing it by being a member of an audience in a way that doesn't quite happen with movies. You know, it's a different experience, and I like that the work that we do can very often be the beginning of a conversation about it, about the themes or ideas that were at work in the play. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's useful. And I view theater in the same way I view good films. You know, these are engines for empathy. They're a way of us as a community to cultivate it or expand on our empathy for these, you know, for these characters that we're having inhabiting our stages.
Yeah, and just when we leave the theater at night for ourselves and those around us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've enjoyed talking to you, Tarek.
I've enjoyed talking to you, too.
Yeah, long may it continue for you and the folks at Ensemble Theater. And I guess in your business they say break a leg, so break a leg this season. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, I appreciate you having the interview with me, and I look forward to seeing you at the shows.
Visit EnsembleTheatreCompany.ca for tickets and information. The Artistic Director of Ensemble Theatre, Tarek Leslie, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.